This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello, this is Richard Bacon, standing in for Mark and Simon and helping me get through this week's film reviews are Boyd Hilton and Nigel Floyd, otherwise known as Boyd and Floyd. This week, the films we're looking at are Whip It, which is directed by Drew Barrymore, and The Infidel, written by David Baddiel. And my guests, Mark Miller, creator of Kick-Ass. So Matthew Vaughn, director of Kick-Ass. Mark Miller came up with the comic book, well, invented the character. And Ricky Gervais. A more formal welcome to the programme. It's 5 minutes past two. Ricky Gervais will be here a bit later. And here's a text to Boyd. You're in Ricky's film.
I am,
allegedly.
Yeah.
So you claim.
No, I am an extra in the film, honestly. Wow. I am.
Floyd, you've seen Cemetery Junction.
I've seen Cemetery Junction twice. I did not see Boyd on either occasion, but he assures me that he is.
I've seen Cemetery Junction once, and I didn't see Boyd Hilton in it.
Well, I've seen it, and I'm definitely in it. And Ricky, the director and writer, will be here later, and I'm sure he will confirm that I'm in it.
Look, there's a picture in Heat Magazine. Is this the current Heat Magazine?
This is the current one. Yeah.
And there's a picture there of Boyd on the set with Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais. Now, anyone can wander down to a set and have a photo as a fan with Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais. That is not the same as being in the film.
But
you need to draw a distinction.
But you wouldn't be fully made up with a wig, a hairpiece, and a moustache and costume, would you? You wouldn't be putting all of that just to meet your heroes, Ricky and Steve.
If you were a little bit sad.
I am a little bit sad, but I was actually in full costume, makeup and hair, especially for this event. And I look awful. I look absolutely hideous.
Tash in particular, I think, looks quite grotesque. Yeah. I mean, we should say hello at this point to Jason Isaacs, of course, about whose Tash there was much talk on the last couple of programmes, but that is a disastrous Tash.
It's hideous.
Point.
Anyway, look, I'm holding the picture up to the camera. You can see the show as ever. It's bbc.co.uk/5live, and this is hurting my arm, but I'm going to hold it there for another 30 seconds. Log on quickly. Here's a text for today. When have you been in a film? When have you had a small part in a film? Don't text in.
No.
Ewan McGregor, put your phone down. When have you been in the background? When have you been an extra? Maybe you were a passenger on a tube train in the British comedy Three and Out. Or perhaps you were a prisoner in Steve Coogan's The Parole Officer, if indeed that film had prisoners in it. So 85058. Maybe you actually weren't even meant to be in the film. You're just wandering in the back of shot and they were filming in a street,
You might have been an extra too in Cemetery Junction, because there were loads of extras the day I was filming. I was filming my role.
Right.
There were loads of them.
Oh, your
dozens.
Role.
My role, yeah.
Get in touch. bacon@bbc.co.uk. So Ricky Gervais after 3 o'clock today. Mark Miller in a couple of minutes' time, who created Kick-Ass. Before we meet Mark, let's just talk about the films that you're going to review later. Boyd Hilton, what are you looking at?
It's an odd week, Richard. I wouldn't say it's full of huge releases, but interesting. They're interesting releases. So we've got Whip It, which is the first film ever directed by Drew Barrymore. Nice Drew Barrymore. And it stars Ellen Page, who was in Juno. We've got The Infidel, which is the film, I think David's been on the show, David Baddiel, who wrote it, has been on the show.
Do you like it?
Let's not give it away.
Okay, so this is the film in which somebody who believes they're a Muslim, believes they're Jewish, finds out they're a Muslim.
Yeah, Omar Jalili.
Okay, Floyd, what are you looking at?
We're looking at Shelter, which is a horror movie with Julianne Moore, which is very much a film of two halves, one of which makes sense and the other of which doesn't.
You're giving it away.
I know.
And I Am Love, with the lovely Tilda Swinton, speaking Italian and Russian in a very arty, very, very glamorous but slightly cold study of a strange marriage.
All right, yes, you're right. They're not big releases, are they? And we'll look at the top 10 as well in the UK cinemas, which is interesting, partly because of Kick-Ass. I think, actually, ticket sales over the last weekend were very high, weren't they, Boyd?
Huge. It was one of the biggest weekends for many, many, many months. And, in fact, I've got a stat about Kick-Ass that I'll give you later. When we do the top 10, I've got a very fascinating statistic about Kick-Ass.
Mark Miller has walked in the studio. Mark, would you like to move around to the orange microphone? Boyd, are you saving fact about Kick-Ass for later, or do you want to tell Mark now?
Well, okay, shall I tell you now?
Yes.
The fact about Kick-Ass is, I'm sure Mark knows, as one of the producers, that it's the highest grossing film ever to open third in the top 10.
I have to write that down before I figure out if it's a compliment or not.
It's true.
It is a compliment. With the two films that beat Kick-Ass, are they 3D films?
They are.
Right, which is about Mark Kermode, normally here on a Friday.
Yeah.
he claims that Kick-Ass, sorry, that 3D has no future in cinema, and the reality is that people, of course, are flocking to the cinema to see 3D films. They're working, aren't they?
To the cinema to see children's films, both of which Clash of the Titans and How to Train Your Dragon would qualify as, because it was the Easter weekend and it was a four-day weekend. They took their kids.
Anyway, let's say a proper hello to Mark Miller. Good afternoon.
Hello there. Nice
welcome.
To see you.
Nice to
Thanks
see you. Sorry, we're going to talk about you and Kick-Ass in a second.
Okay.
I mentioned Mark Kermode there. It's also worth mentioning the fact that he's been nominated for a very prestigious Sony Award for its Best Specialist Contributor. Which is to this show. So that's a big deal, Boyd.
And fully deserved.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we just live in his shadow, really.
We do. That's why
Floyd and I literally live in his shadow.
Because one person would not be enough to make up for Mark on his own.
Yeah. Can there be a new category next year of Best Substitute for the Best Contributor?
Yeah, this now looks as though I mentioned that to make you feel a little bit inferior.
That's fine.
That's okay.
That.
We can
deal with it.
Mark Miller, it's great to see you. I read the graphic novel of it, as it's called, of Kick-Ass.
Oh, comics fan. That's good.
Comics fan.
Yeah, I'm not a purist.
I read it after the film, and I love the film. I adore the film. I think it's the most exciting film I've seen in years. And actually, I thought that your comic book was even funnier than the film.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait to tell Matthew Vaughn that. That's great.
I didn't say that.
He'll be listening
Matthew
at home
when
right
he was in here. There's so much to talk about here. I'm not a regular comic book reader, and when I first heard about Kick-Ass, I assumed that it was an old superhero character from the, you know, Marvel or DC glory days of 50 years ago that hadn't been brought to the screen yet. And in actual fact, this was developed in tandem with the film, wasn't it?
Well, it was drawn at the time that the movie was getting made. I mean, I started writing it maybe 3 years ago, about 3 years back, but comic books take a long time to get put together. I mean, you can write them pretty quickly, but drawing them, it's like, if you're very fast, you can do a page a day. And this was like 140 pages, and the guy was drawing other books at the same time too, like Spider-Man and so on. So it took ages, it took forever, to the point where the movie almost beat the book coming out. It was just nuts.
Is it true that you had this idea for the character?
Yeah.
And then you rang Jonathan Ross and said, I've thought of Kick-Ass and I don't know what to do with it.
No, honestly, Matthew's, I don't know, he must be on crack or something, because he's forgetting the actual story. What happened was, he invited me along to his party. We'd become friendly through Jonathan and Jane, and we talked about everything except Kick-Ass that night. And then later on we got chatting about Kick-Ass, but it actually sounds better that I came up and pitched it to him at his premiere party, you know. But I don't know if I'd be that crass, you know. Like, I was just having a drink that night, you know?
So you're at Matthew Vaughn's house.
Yeah,
that already sounds exciting.
It actually was. I was the only face I didn't recognise in the house that night. It was bizarre. It looked like the Sgt. Pepper cover, you know, because every single person in the room was a famous person, you know?
Was Claudia handing around the canapes?
and so
you had a chat there, and that's when you decided to work together.
Well, Jonathan had hooked us up a little bit before, because Matthew was doing a movie called Thor, which is a big Marvel character, and I work at Marvel half of the year too over in New York. And I had some ideas for it, and I was just saying, like, I knew Matthew was having trouble with it, so quite arrogantly I wrote a list of brilliant ideas and said, this should solve all your problems, and fired them off to him. And that ended up not happening because the budget wasn't what Matthew wanted and everything on the movie. And he came off and he just said to me, look, I liked a lot of your ideas, have you got anything else? And I had two projects he was thinking about. One was called American Jesus, which was my sequel to the Bible.
This sounds great. He rejected that.
No, he was going to do it, and then I just mentioned conversationally, we were all set to do American Jesus, and then at the last minute I just mentioned, oh, I'm doing this thing, Kick-Ass, and he liked the title. And he said, can you send me the scripts? And I'd written the first couple. I was on the third one, I think, by that point, and was feeding them the scripts. And by the time I got issue four done, Matthew said, look, I love this. Let's not involve any lawyers. I'll just start writing the screenplay now.
Which is the bit of the idea that got him really excited? Because there's two...
I can tell you exactly what it was. I knew them.
Is it Hit Girl?
Hit Girl coming at the end of issue three. Hit Girl uses the C word. And
that's the point when he thought, right,
and
I'm
that's,
making
he
this
He actually
film.
Phoned me up and he says, I liked these first two issues, but the third one is where I fell in love with this and I want to make it into a movie, you know? And it was, he said that was the thing that made him feel like he felt with Lockstock and everything. It just, this was something a bit radical.
So he knew he was setting out to make a film, a shocking film.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean,
because when I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago and he said that in relation to the C word, they weren't going to put it in the film. And then it's Chloe, isn't it, the actress who plays Hit Girl. It was her mother said, look, it's in the comic book. I don't mind her saying that word. And they did it in one take.
That's when he fell in love with the project, you know, and then he wrote the screenplay. And I just assumed that wouldn't be in it because I thought it's one thing to have it in a book, but to have someone in real life saying it's a bit stronger, you know. And Matthew said, yeah, we won't probably use it in the movie. So it wasn't in the original screenplay. But then with the subsequent draft, laughs, it eventually made it in. And I wasn't on set that day, so I was as surprised as everyone when I was looking at some of the rushes and saw this. But I was delighted.
How many times have you seen it in the cinema?
About a million times. That's why it's doing so well.
And every single time that you see that scene... Mm. Where Hitgill turns up and uses the C word. Does he get the same reaction in the cinema? And what is that reaction?
The reaction's very interesting because I've actually got quite OCD about the movie now, and that I don't watch the film. I turn around and look at everyone. I look so creepy in the cinemas, you know? So I gauge reactions for specific scenes that I know is coming up. And, like, the C word scene actually has a gap of about 5 or 10 seconds before people respond. It's like they can't believe, and it's like their brain's just processing it, which I love. And then they laugh about 2 beats later, you know?
That, which is, I think, a good reaction, isn't it? It's that it's the moment when they you see the audience process what's just happened, but then their reaction is that they laugh at it.
Oh yeah, it's like a nuclear accident or something. Your brain doesn't process it.
Here's the thing that stood out to me. So the Daily Mail. Well, I'm going to read. Have you read the Christopher Tookie Daily Mail review of the film?
I've been
by the
waiting
way,
waiting on that for 2 years.
Have you seen what he said?
Oh yeah,
it's just astonishing, isn't it?
No, but as a Daily Mail reader myself, you know, like, the thing I love about it is people said to me, you know, what do you think the Daily Mail's going to think of this? I say I get the Daily Mail every day and I love it. It's a great film, you know. So Tookie's a lone voice among mail readers, I feel.
Well, let's I'll read you some. I know you know what's in there, but let's deal with what Christopher Tookie, the Mail film critic, said about the film. He was talking about the film Kick-Ass, but of course he's talking about the character, which is your creation. In case you don't know, he gave it 1 star. Mm-hmm. The review starts with verdict evil. Rating 1 star, and I'll just read the last line.
Yeah.
In Hit Girl, the filmmakers have created one of the most disturbing icons and damaging role models in the history of cinema.
That should be on the poster.
Okay, well, let's break that down and have a look at it properly in a few minutes' time. And I want to read out a scene from the comic book as well that's not in the film. 85058, bacon@bbc.co.uk. Mark Miller is here. Been asking as well, when have you been in a film? Ricky Gervais is on after 3. Boyd Hilton, you're in Ricky's new film, Cemetery Junction. What a turn that is. I've seen it and Floyd has seen it and we've not noticed you. How long are you on screen for?
Probably for, you know, half a second, I imagine.
So we are... and you're kind of in disguise as well.
Yeah.
So the question is, when have you been in a film? When have you had a small part in a film? Dear Richard, I was an extra in a film called Stone Scissors, played along with Ken Stott and Juliet Stevenson, says Alan in Doncaster. Seth says, I was an extra in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I've got a soft spot for that film.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I know it's rubbish.
It's rubbish, but
it's set in Nottinghamshire, where I'm from. So I automatically like it. You can see my arm dangling down in the opening dungeon scene, says Seth.
An arm.
Dear Richard, brackets, and Judy, I was Jude Law's hands in Alfie.
Handstanding. Okay.
Best bit of the film, in my opinion, says Ian Williams. And dear Richard, I was in Cemetery Junction. In fact, I'm there at the moment. I live in said location and happy to be working from home. Gabriel in Reading. Nice. It's a bit of a joke. Kind of works. So we're Richard Bacon on 5 Live. Good afternoon. It is 20 minutes past 2. Boyd Hilton is here. Floyd, it's Boyd and Floyd sort of hired together largely.
I messed up the opening. Can I just apologise? Because when you went to me, when you introduced the show and you went to me, I was supposed to say Boyd. And Nigel's supposed to say Floyd, and I completely messed up. And I apologise. Because our names do rhyme. That's
why we're here, because our names rhyme. There's no other reason for us being here.
You know, you joke. You're absolutely right. That's why you're appearing on the radio. It is true that you should have said, I'm born. You didn't do that, and we had rehearsed it. But here's the thing, the audience didn't know that was in the script, so you didn't need to point that out. So in a way, you've made the problem worse, really.
Amateur. I'm an amateur.
The texts are, when have you been in, have you had a small part in a film? Boyd has a small part in Cemetery Junction, Ricky Gervais's new film, and Ricky will be here after 3 o'clock. Dear Richard, I was in the crowd for the scene set in the Hacienda in the movie 24-Hour Party People. We were all asked to wear clothes from the Manchester era, and my vile mambo top is clearly visible, says David Dunn in Manchester. And Sarah in Aberdeen says, my hubby was the body double for Gerard Depardieu in My Father the Hero, brackets, before he got really fat. 85058.
I had a tiny part in Kick-Ass.
I don't know whether Sarah means her husband or Gerald Depardieu. Yeah, sorry, Mark.
I was just saying I get a tiny part in Kick-Ass, but get cut out. I couldn't believe
it. Oh, no.
I didn't find out
because
Jane Goldman's kids are in it. I noticed them. Yeah. They're in it very, very clearly. But you got cut out.
They're cooler, honestly. No, the thing is, I thought it was going to be something cool. Matthew says to me, I'll get you a good part. And I was playing a homeless Glasgow drunk. And I thought it was going to be like a special forces guy or something. I was really excited. And then I showed up in my regular clothes. clothes, and the clothes woman says to me, "You're fine as you are, just go on." I didn't even get a costume to play a homeless
the
guy.
The clothes woman. It's not a technical term.
I think that's what they call it.
Let's talk about his Daily Mail review, because it's fascinating. And you know, Christopher Tukey is entitled to his opinion.
Very much.
And he's written this review in the Mail. Now, most critics gave it 4 or 5 stars. It had an awful lot of 5-star reviews, didn't it, Floyd?
It did, absolutely. We were there.
Thanks, guys.
Floyd, you're a fan of this film, aren't you?
I'm a big fan of the film. And what's interesting about the Chris Tukey comments is that he talks about this film in exactly the same way that people talked about Clockwork Orange back in the 70s. And what he's missing is that for every generation, there will be a film like that. And the nicest thing I can say to Mark Miller, who's sitting here beside me now, is that the experience I had of watching this film took me back to the teenager I was the first time I saw Clockwork Orange. Wow. Yes, it's dangerous. Yes, it's irresponsible. That's exactly what you need at that point in your life. And it's so bold and it's so audacious. And the Christopher Tukey thing is clearly something where he's being used as a ventriloquist by the people who are sitting behind him, a little ventriloquist dummy, saying the things that people expect to hear in the Daily Mail.
Let me read out a couple of lines, because there must be some people who think this way. I can only assume that he reflects the views of some of the male readers. So he says that Kick-Ass deliberately sells a perniciously sexualized view of children and glorifies violence, especially knife and gun crime, in a way that makes it one of the most deeply cynical, shamelessly irresponsible films ever made.
The sexualizing children thing is insane. I mean, for starters, we're all parents, everybody who's working on the film. But the biggest thing was that Chloe is prepubescent, you know, and every bit of flesh is covered up apart from, like, her chin. You know, she's wearing intentionally baggy clothes because we went to extra lengths to make sure nothing like that happens. So people are fetishized, of course, and Lara Croft and all those kind of things, you know, but not kids and not Hit Girl. He's the only person who said that, which makes me slightly worried about him.
Our hero learns nothing except that extreme violence against criminals is cool.
It does work.
What do you mean?
Well, extreme violence against criminals, it closed them all down. The mafia was gone by the end of that movie.
But in Kick-Ass, childish violence of the most extreme kind, hacking off limbs, shooting in the mouth, impalings and fatal stabbings, is presented with calculated flippancy, as funny and admirable and most perversely of all, sexually arousing. He makes that point again. This is a point he comes back to time and again in this review.
He was quite turned on by this film. He clearly was quite turned on, which is worrying. But in all honesty, though, I think, if anything, we show the ramifications of violence more than any other action movie I've ever seen. Spider-Man, all these films, it's cartoon violence with no consequences, whereas we have... The first night the guy's out in patrol in costume, he ends up in hospital for 6 months. So we show the consequences of violence all the way through the movie, unlike Die Hard, unlike Spider-Man, unlike anything.
Yeah, OK. Well, listen, we'll leave Christopher Tukey because he's not here to defend himself.
That's always the best way. I like that.
Sure you do. Did every other critic like it? Was there any negative?
I read a negative review in a very good magazine called The Word magazine, which The Word is, unlike The Daily Mail, is a very, you know, forward thinking, progressive, very good publication. But the critic happened not to like it. Thought it was kind of cheap, and that the effects it was going for were obvious. But I haven't. But I would say that was one very unusual in terms of. Interesting, decent, proper publications. I would say that was one of the few negative reviews I've read.
The Telegraph just gave it a lacklustre review. Okay. It wasn't like a critical thing or anything. But it's quite odd because these are like the real standalones. Like everybody else has been incredibly kind about it. It's got to the point, it's so ridiculous. I was sitting reading the paper with my daughter the other day, who's 11, and I said to her, "Oh, look, we've only got a 4-star. What's going on?" Because we're so used to the 5 stars. We're gutted at 4 now. You know?
I was at the premiere. I actually stood up and gave it a standing ovation.
Oh, fantastic.
I was that excited. By. Talking about the comic book itself, there is a distinction between the comic book and the film. It largely follows the comic book.
Yeah.
The end is different, and there are a few other plot points within it that are different. How did you feel about that, and how did you feel about the way that Jane Goldman and Matthew Vaughn, who wrote the screenplay, how'd you feel about where they took it?
Matthew and Jane are just like, you know, the perfect team to work with. You know, they were so incredibly gracious, and any changes they made, they discussed beforehand and explained why. And I get it, you know, like a comic book is a monthly thing, it's an 8-act structure, whereas a movie's 3 acts, and people have got to leave the cinema feeling better than when when they came in and so on, you know. So all the changes were made to make it a better movie. Yeah. And I think sometimes a movie like Watchmen was a very literal adaptation of the book and failed in that sense as a movie because it was a bit clunky in places. Whereas Matthew and Jane, when they made a change, it was for the sake of the movie, so I was happy enough with it. I mean, I love them both, you know, so I couldn't have been happier.
There's a bit here, let me read a bit here. So obviously lots of people are talking about the use of the C word, and that's very shocking. Yeah. There's quite a few looking for shocking moments. This is a comic book void with lots of shocking moments in it.
Thankfully, yeah.
Let me read this bit that kind of stood out to me. This is when they're going towards the end, when they're about to go up to that penthouse and have a bit of a... This is the Newmont, where they go and have a fight with all the main baddies, and they're in a lift together,
yeah.
And Kick-Ass is talking to Hit Girl, and Hit Girl's 10. And he says, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Activating condition red. Dad gave me this for emergencies and said it would give me the strength of 10 men. And he goes, "Is that cocaine?" And she says, "No, lame brain. It's a super secret chemical compound designed by scientists. Now, open my Hello Kitty bag. I think I'm coming up." No, that is very funny, but even, do you think that was almost even too shocking for the filmmakers to put in there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we have to draw the line somewhere. In the about good taste. I like to draw the line somewhere.
Let's 85058, bacon at bbc.co.uk. What was the reaction from other people, comic book fans and other people who write comic books to Kick-Ass?
Everyone has actually loved it, and it's been lovely sitting in all the various screenings we've done, whether it was test screenings in London or Texas, or you know the premieres in these places have all been great. The only time I felt vaguely uncomfortable was when I was sitting with my relatives. I had a private family screening, and it was weird. I didn't realise how harsh it was until I was sitting with my elderly relatives, and then I thought, oh, hang on, some of this is a bit much, and then I started to remember all the terrible stuff that was still to come, you know, and every line was an affront to them, you know. But at the end of it, I think they all saw it for free, they got a free drink after it, and they were all in a good mood, so I think they enjoyed the night out.
Were you surprised that it was given a 15 certificate and not an 18?
Sort of in some ways, but I actually think they called it pretty good in the sense that by the end of the movie, I don't think anyone would walk out upset, because it's got enough humour in it that I think it balances everything out. So at first I was a little surprised because I thought, just even with the swearing alone, I thought it would be an 18. But I actually think they really called it right, and it just shows maybe I'm just getting close in age to the people who do these things now that I'm starting to agree with
them. I think it shows a remarkable, I mean, Mark made this point last week, that a remarkable amount of sophistication on the part of the censors really these days, that they are aware that the tone of a film and the audience that it's aimed at and all of those things count so much, and that they got it. I think they got the film and they gave it 15, because I think, you know, they would easily have. I remember Floyd emailed me in shock when he saw the film saying, oh, it's got to be 18. But amazingly.
I thought the knife violence stuff alone would be enough, because that's a bit of a hot potato at the moment with, you know, gangs and knife violence. And I thought, they're not going to like that, and they're certainly not going to like the C word stuff. But actually, when I saw it the second time, again, I wasn't so shocked, you know, and I sort of saw where they were coming from. So I thought, okay, 15,
Because it's cartoon-like violence, isn't it? That's why.
There's a gentleness to the movie, I think, in a weird way. Maybe as a Glaswegian, I'm the only person who feels that. But I think by the end of the film, you feel quite nice. There's something quite charming about the movie, too. Yeah.
We're asking people if they have been in a film. Have you had a small part in a film? Dear Richard, my wife was the person who first said, "Up your bum," to Emily Lloyd in the film Wish You Were Here. Is it possible to be more proud? Mark Miller is here, creator of Kick-Ass. We'll take some travel, then we'll come back and talk to you lots more, Mark, if that's okay with you. And I want to know how you got into this game and your next projects and some other stuff. And some really good texts come in. Boyd's here, Floyd's here. We're asking if you have ever been in a film. Have you been an extra? Have you had a small part in a film? Let me just do one quickly. Sam in Yorkshire says, "I was in 28 Days Later as a zombie. I ran down the street in the background as quickly as I could. However, I got carried away and caught my knee on the corner of a building as I was legging it. It looks like some fantastic overacting, but it was, in fact, the single most painful moment of my life." So I can't keep reading out these texts. You know, I need to speak to Mark Miller for a little while. I'll read out more later. There's someone here who was an extra in the final sequence in From Russia with Love. Listening to this show now.
That is exciting.
Mark Miller,
yes?
You invented Kick-Ass.
Yep.
You were telling me that Larry Lamb of EastEnders and Gavin and Stacey fame isn't just in Superman 3.
He's also in Superman 1 and 2. This is why you've got me here. It's like he turns around wearing headphones, I think, in Superman 2.
This level of detail is amazing.
To say tragic.
And in Superman 1 he has a small part as well, you know, because it's funny, I was the only person who knew who Larry Lamb was when I was watching those films, because he used to do a show called Triangle when I was a kid, and I used to fancy Kate O'Mara when I was about 9.
Right.
So I would watch it.
Well, I would have treated him with even more reverence if I'd known that he'd be, because Superman 3 is not the best one. If I'd known he was in 1 and 2, well,
1 and 2, no, that's different.
Now, you're going to work with Matthew Vaughan again.
Yes.
First of all, there will be a sequel to Kick-Ass, is that right?
Unless something goes horribly wrong between now and the opening in America, but it's looking great. I mean, we got the stuff back from, actually just this morning, we got stuff in from Universal that said it's beating, you know, Inglourious at this stage, beating The Hulk, all the sort of big movies they've had recently. The only one that I think's comparable is Wanted, the film we did with Angelina Jolie a couple of years back.
Which is your, which is your own character.
Which I was quite pleased, yeah, it's fine. They're both our top ones just now. So
this is better than Wanted, isn't it, as a film?
I think it is. I think it is. Now that I'm promoting this, yes. It is much better than Wanted.
But Wanted was pretty good, though. It was very... It was.
Oh, I was happy. I mean, God, it's my first film. You know, by all accounts, it should have been rubbish.
You've
really
had very good... I mean, because Alan Moore, famously, who was, I guess, an inspiration in some ways,
yeah,
too.
Oh, and he's a god to me, yeah.
He hates anything the film's to do with his work, completely.
Yeah.
And won't have anything to do with it. And you're completely opposite. You're totally involved.
I think it's because I've been so lucky, though, as well. You know, because I think if my first two or three films had been absolute rubbish, I'd have been very wary of adaptations. Mm. Whereas I had Timur Bekmambetov and Angelina Jolie in my first film. I mean, how insane is that? Matthew Vaughan. Yeah.
I think with Kick-Ass as well, there's something of an alignment of the stars. You've got a great invention, a great comic book, a brilliant director. Aaron Johnson turned out to be astonishingly good in the lead role. Everything came right, didn't it? And came good.
Everything could have gone wrong, but luckily worked out great. I mean, really, you have to remember it got rejected by everyone. All the studios said it was unmakeable just 2 and a bit years ago.
Is it true that Matthew Vaughan then raised the money at a dinner party at his house?
The making of the movie is like a movie that Vaughan said to me, the studios all hate it. And normally they take a week to think about things, but they uniformly said, this is rubbish.
It's the 10-year-old with the C word, isn't it?
Everything that was any good about it, they wanted out. They wanted Hit Girl out the movie, all the things people like. And Vaughan says to me, I'm taking this as a challenge. And most people would slink off and go and do the new James Bond or something. But Vaughan was like, no, I want to show them they're wrong. So he raised $35 million personally himself.
What does that say about his circle of friends? I can't think of a dinner party I've held at my house where that would have been feasible.
Maybe 10 million we could have raised, you know.
10, 15,
But Vaughan, you know, it's 35 million, and weeks later, Nicolas Cage is in costume on a set that Vaughan's paying for personally. And then he sells it back for more money than he originally wanted to the studios, who all rejected it. It's very, you know, he's quite an interesting character, Vaughan.
Isn't that great?
I think the fact that it was made outside of the studio system is clearly what's made it so uncompromisingly adhere to your tone and vision. Yeah. It's the tone of it, I think, because forgetting all that, the Daily Mail thing, the tone of it is very quirky and funny and warm, and despite the fact there's this horrendous violence and swearing and all of that, which everyone goes on about, all the transgressive nature of it, actually the tone of it is incredibly likeable, in fact lovable, and I think that's why people take it to their hearts, which is the important thing.
And Nicolas Cage, I think, has a lot to do with that. Didn't he originally come in for another role and then end up playing Big Daddy?
Yeah, we talked to loads of people for all the different characters, and we saw him in the Mark Strong role originally, and then he just came in with and he came in with this Big Daddy Batman riff that he'd come up with himself, you know, which was delivering all the lines in the Adam West staccato, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just genius. His other idea that he had, which I loved, was that his secret identity was a moustache, but whenever he was going to be Big Daddy, he had a slightly larger moustache that he added onto the side. And I thought, you're worth your money, you know.
Listen, thank you so much. That's fascinating that Matthew Vaughan then sold it back to the same studios who rejected it for more money. That's a good little story. So, with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, ABC rejected that, and a producer at ABC in America resigned, bought the rights, and then sold it back to ABC when they saw it had been a big hit over here. Similar sort of thing.
That is amazing.
Thank you. By the way, a couple of other things I wanted to mention quickly. I haven't read modern day comic books, and this is the first one I've read, and there's a lot in here of MySpace and YouTube and camera phones and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting actually how well those lend themselves to comic books, partly because the protagonists are often geeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And they really enhance it, don't they? You write for Marvel half the year anyway as a kind of staff writer, so you're writing on things like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Do the modern Spider-Man comics, are they set today? Do they use...
Oh, yeah, but it's absolutely reflective of what's going on around us. The thing that's really nice about comics is a movie, if you're lucky, comes out 2 years after you write it, but a comic is out really within weeks of writing the thing, so everything's massively up to date. That's why I love working in it. It's almost like newspapers, but with Spider-Man.
Is it true that Jonathan Ross has got his own comic book coming out?
Jonathan's doing a book that's out this week called Turf, and it's a vampire book. It's a great idea. It's all about gangsters and vampires having a turf war. in 1920s New York.
Sounds ace.
And it's pretty cool, actually. It's good.
Someone said to me it's got one of the highest pre-orders of a comic book ever or something.
I think he's offered to sign every one of them. I think that's
Thank you so much, Mark. It's great to see you. So, Kick-Ass, the movie is out. The comic book is out. You're pretty certain there'll be a sequel. And you're also working on another superhero film with Matthew Vaughn, aren't you?
Yeah, Vaughn and I will probably make an announcement early summer, I'd imagine. We're going to do... There's a book I've got coming out in September. Vaughn's adapting. Then Kick-Ass 2.
Great stuff. Thank you very much. Mark Miller. Ricky Gervais here at 3:15. We must do some film reviews because it is the Friday film show, not with Simon and Mark, with myself, Boyd and Floyd. And Boyd, we'll start with you. What film are we reviewing first?
Well, are we going to do the top 10 first? Do you want to do the top 10 first?
I apologise. We're doing the top 10 first. I'm sorry.
You know.
Not familiar enough with this
format.
You're
such a maverick. I know.
I know. Yeah, that's right.
Come
on. I like to throw the rule book out the window.
I know, but I'd like to do the top 10
first. Okay, let's do the UK top 10, Boyd Hilton.
Yes.
What's at 10?
And number 10 is The Spy Next Door, which is the Jackie Chan kind of comedy thriller thing where he plays a CIA agent who has to look after his girlfriend's kids. It's I've seen it. It's kind of weirdly enjoyable. I rather enjoyed it. Jackie Chan is 55 years old, we should point out, and he's doing films as if he's in his, you know, mid-20s, and he's not. But somehow he copes, and somehow he's rather likeable, nay, lovable. And I'm a Jackie Chan fan. Jackie Chan fans will have seen it already. It's kind of, it will slip out the top 10, but it was fairly enjoyable.
Okay, thank you. At 9, The Bounty Hunter.
The Bounty Hunter. Try to imagine, if you can, Midnight Run with Gerard Butler in the Robert De Niro role and Jennifer Aniston in the Charles Grodin role. It does not work on any level at all.
It's also doing badly,
terrible.
I was reading today, that it's done badly here and it's done badly in the States. It's not taking a lot of money.
Gerard Butler is a really good action guy, but he's not a comedy guy. It's not his thing, really. Although, when we talk later about How to Train Your Dragon, there is a hint of something there. Jennifer Aniston is a blank. She is just a space on the screen, as usual. Just appalling.
She's a great natural. I've not seen this film. I'm always impressed by what a natural she is. I wonder why she doesn't stretch herself a bit. Why she just go, yeah, I'll do another rom-com. Yeah, that's fine.
It's depressing.
But
depressing.
I'll tell you what else is depressing is a lot of these rom-coms that she does do really well. This, maybe there's something slightly...
Well, the last few haven't, though.
Well, Marley and Me.
That was ages ago. That was every year ago now. But that was the last one that did do well.
That was a load of rubbish.
But that was really about dog as well.
But that was massive.
It had a cute
it
dog.
Was huge.
I mean, you know, you have a cute dog, you can sell a movie.
Okay, boy, let's talk about Shutter Island.
Floyd and I disagree on this. I absolutely love Shutter Island. I've seen it twice. I think it's an absolute, fantastically entertaining, enjoyable, gloriously over-the-top, operatic piece of Hitchcockian stuff and nonsense, and I love it.
I agree entirely with the stuff and nonsense element of that. It is, in fact, completely nonsensical, is the word, actually. It just, there is nothing in this film which is real, and what he's trying to do is to be clever with the whole idea of making a Hitchcock film and make a kind of Hitchcock film which is about Hitchcock films, and frankly, for my money, it just doesn't work. If you want to see a Hitchcockian movie, then wait a couple of weeks and see Roman Polanski's The Ghost, because that's a proper Hitchcock
I've not
movie.
Seen Shutter Island yet, but everyone I know who's seen it absolutely loves it.
It's been a huge hit. It's taken nearly 10 million here. It's well over 100 million in the US. A huge hit.
All right, listen, we need to be quick here. Only 3 minutes before the news. At 7, Remember Me, Boyd.
Yes, Remember Me. This is the Arpats romantic kind of melodrama, if you like. Kind of doomed love. He plays a kind of James Dean-style rebellious figure. And the interesting thing about this film with Arpats, he's pretty good in it. Emily de Raven is the girl. She's pretty good in it. It has this huge big thing at the end. And some people think you shouldn't even say there's a huge big thing at the end, but Dr. K did last week, so there you go. And the huge big thing at the end may well ruin the whole thing.
We need to fly through this. At 6,
okay,
The Blind Side.
Sandra Bullock won an Oscar, deservedly so. Film's not up to much.
It's likeable enough, isn't it? It's a true story, Floyd. Have a heart. At 5, Boyd Hilton, it's Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I pretty liked Alice in Wonderland, but don't worry about the 3D anymore. If it's too late, obviously everyone has worried about 3D, but it looks really good in 2D.
I thought Helena Bonham Carter was great.
She's fantastic.
I thought the film was tedious. Okay. At 4, Nanny McPhee.
Nanny McPhee and the Big Bang, a sequel, of course, to Nanny McPhee. The Good Doctor thinks that this is actually as good as or possibly better than the original. It's not. It's not as magical, although it does have more special effects.
Boyd Hilton at 3, Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass at number 3. It would have normally been number 1 because it's taken nearly £4 million, but it's unfortunately the same because two huge 3D films, but it's doing very well. Taken 10,000 average per screen, which is very good.
At 2, How to Train Your Dragon, the aforementioned. What is it, Floyd?
It is a terrific film about a young boy who is a Viking, whose dad, played by Gerard Butler, voiced, we should say, by Gerard Butler, is the head of the Viking clan, who basically can't quite get his head round the idea of slaying dragons and, in fact, befriends one. It is a tremendous movie and one of the few films that I've seen recently that actually uses 3D in a constructive and useful way.
OK, and one, Clash of the Titans, Boyd.
Yeah, famously retrofitted with 3D, wasn't filmed in 3D, ridiculously pointless to see it in 3D and spend all that extra money. Semi-pointless to see it anyway, I found it rather irritating. A CGI fest, and I am a bit over CGI fest. If you didn't like, you know, The Mummy and The Mummy 2 would just descend into a huge climax of everything's in CGI. It's kind of like that, and I find it irritating.
Nick on the M11, dear Richard, now we're asking people who've had small parts in films because you, Boyd, are in Cemetery Junction.
I am.
Richard, I worked as a runner on Kick-Ass. In the final shootout scene, you may see me in the background as a dead body, as we didn't have enough dummies. And I was an extra at the end of Brighton Pier in Oh, What a Lovely War. You'll be able to see me for 3 seconds. I watch it most weeks, says David. That is 2 seconds longer than you see Boyd Hilton for in Ricky Gervais' Cemetery Junction. It's the movie show with myself, Richard Bacon, instead of Simon, and instead of Mark Kermode, Boyd and Floyd are here.
Hello.
Ricky Gervais shortly. He has a new film, Cemetery Junction. Boyd, which he's written with Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, and directed.
It's kind of autobiographical, isn't it?
It is semi-autobiographical, yeah.
70s, wanting to escape a small town.
Yeah, vaguely Reading, although they don't actually name it as Reading.
Although Cemetery Junction is in Reading.
They do, because his mum says to him at one point at the dinner table, why would you want to go to Paris? There are parts of Reading you haven't seen yet.
Which is a line his mum really said to him, isn't it?
Yes.
And Boyd's in that film for a second, been asking you if you have been in a film. Just get in touch with us. If you, either deliberately or not, maybe you just found yourself wandering in the back of shots somewhere. 85058, Bacon at bbc.co.uk. Dear Richard, I was an extra in From Russia With Love. That's exciting.
Oh, that's good.
I was a villain in the final sequence, which was a speedboat chase where Bond, in the end, caused the baddies to blow up. Of course he did. I spent many days firing a machine gun. This gets better. It was great. It was pre-CGI, so in the end, they blew up bags of petrol around us. It was very hot, and then it was even hotter. Incidentally, Shutter Island, if you had not already known, it was some sort of a pastiche. It's difficult to enjoy. We saw it uninformed in Madrid and left the cinema puzzled. I think making a film as a joke is no excuse for... No, I can't say. It would reveal the plot, says Vicky Gibson.
I don't think it's a joke. I think there's a difference between a kind of homage, you know, to that kind of film and a joke. I don't think he made it as a joke. I think he made it perfectly seriously.
Okay, that is Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island. Let's look at the brand new films. Boyd, we'll start with you. One of them is called Whip It.
Whip It.
What is Whip It?
Well, Whip It, frankly.
Not what is a Whip It. What is the film Whip It?
Whip It, frankly, is a roller derby film. It's a film about roller derby, roller derby, as they say in the United States, where it takes place, which is basically where girls in teams kind of roller skate round and they kind of knock each other around, and it's a bizarre sport. It's a sport. And apparently people are starting to do it here now, mainly inspired by this film. Someone messaged me on Twitter saying, you know, friends of mine are in the States on a roller derby tour now due to Whip It. It's spreading the world of roller derby.
Roller disco, so this is one up from a roller
disco. Yeah, it's kind of roller disco sport version.
Okay.
Competitive roller disco, if you like.
Think Rollerball. 70s sci-fi movie,
exactly.
But with girls.
This is the sort of thing that would lend itself to a Will Ferrell comedy.
It's not like a Will Ferrell comedy. It's not a silly, it's kind of quite a sincere comedy, directed by Drew Barrymore, which is also in it. It stars Ellen Page, who is in Juno, and it's kind of, and well, let's hear a little clip from it now, first of all.
Men, hold on to your cookies. It's the Hurl Scouts! Number 99, captain of the Hurl Scouts, Maggie Mayhem. Number 69, Bloody Holly. Number 3, Rosa Sparks. Number 2, Smashley Simpson. Razor McGee's Hurl Scouts have come in last place 3 years running. This league has 5 teams, each with their own theme. What outlaws do we have skating against the Hurl Scouts this fine Texas evening here? I'm talking about the girls so bad that even God can't keep them in line. Give it up for the undefeated Holy Rollers! Last season champs are led by the...
That voice there was Jimmy Fallon, who's not a big star in the film. Jimmy Fallon is the American talk show host.
Yeah.
Very funny guy in Saturday Night Live. He just plays a very small role as the announcer of these big events, the big climactic kind of roller derby events. I really like this film. You'd see it, you think, oh my God, there's a roller derby comedy directed by somebody who's never directed before, or Drew Barrymore, who was in E.T. Why should I bother with this film? But actually, What it's trying to do, I think the inspiration for it is a film called Breaking Away, which was made in the late 70s, which was about kind of small town guys discovering cycling and turning and it kind of opening their hearts and giving them a way out. And it's got a little bit in common with Cemetery Junction in the fact that these are small town people in Texas and she wants to break away from her world. And this is the way she does it, is doing roller derby. I think it's a lovely, sweet, charming, witty. The script is very witty. I think the performances are great. It's about 10 times better than it has a right to be. It's formulaic. It's, you know, in the end it is all right. You know, she's gonna suddenly be really good at this sport, and that this team of losers is suddenly gonna be really good. And you know, everything that happens in it is predictable. But actually, each scene upon scene, it's very enjoyable and it's very well written. It's very well performed.
Directed by Drew Barrymore, and it's out this week. Very only a couple of seconds. We're going to go back to Aintree. Floyd, did you like it?
I did not quite as much. I thought it was a good idea, but it was a little bit like a wimpy indie movie mixed up with a 70s exploitation movie. I like one half, but not the other.
Thank you. Ricky Gervais is here. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Nice to see you. We're just going to do a quick film review of The Infidel, David Baddiel's film. Have you seen it yet?
I'm just relieved it wasn't going to be my film in front of me.
We wouldn't do that.
We wouldn't do that, of course not. Actually, we have reviewed your film and it went down very well.
Good.
You'll be pleased to know.
Very good.
Have you seen The Infidel or not?
I have, yes. I saw an advanced copy.
What do you think of it?
A really nice, fun film, I think. Yeah, I said it was sort of like British sitcom farce meets Woody Allen sensibilities.
Yeah. And this is, boy, just tell us a bit about it. This is about a bloke who thinks he's Jewish and turns out to be a Muslim.
Yeah, it's Omar Jalili. Off of television, playing this guy who's from a very nice, pleasant Muslim, happened to be Muslim family, you know, very kind of, you know, just a lovable family. And you just meet him, you get to know him, he's the kind of guy who sits in front of the TV watching stuff, and he's a very likeable guy. And then suddenly he finds out that he was adopted and that he's really Jewish. And let's have a clip.
No, there's got to be some mistake in the records. Can I just look at that, please?
No, you said
no, come
you
on,
don't.
Please. No, that's before I knew my name was Solly.
This is it.
Just have a quick look. Mrs. Keys, please.
This is it. I'm in security.
I'm not joking. I need to look at it, please. Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Shimshiz.
I think it's pronounced Shimshilowitz. Security.
Solly Shimshilowitz.
Yes.
No. But that would mean I was... Well, I was...
Yes, Mr. Nazir, as indeed it goes on to confirm later in the document, in common with many people living in this area at the time, you are, by birth, Jewish.
No, but I can't be. I mean, look at me. I'm so obviously not.
Well, that's not what it says here, Mr. Nazir, and you are also at the present time leaving. Thank you.
Oh, well, I'll give me a break. You find out you're Jewish and... Suddenly some bloke in a uniform's leading you away? That's ridiculous.
So, that's a clip of The Infidel. We've got slightly sidetracked here by a discussion about mineral water. That's a nice-looking mineral
Someone
water.
Someone just gave me this mineral water, and I tasted it, and I was taken aback. I thought, oh, they've given me 7-Up or lemonade by mistake. It is the tastiest water I've ever had in my life.
I said, and if only we weren't the BBC, you could even say what brand
that water... Well, I think I can. It's for charity. I can say that, can't I?
Okay,
all the profits go to water pumps in Africa. 100% of our profit is so Love One, it's called. It's amazing. I honestly, I've never gone on about water in my life.
No, you haven't. Thank you very much for that that endorsement. That's for water pumps in Africa.
Yeah.
You buy that, you buy
Do they get this water?
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be amazing.
Wouldn't it?
This is going to make their day.
Very quickly, we'll finish off the Infidel chat. Floyd, rather, is it a good film?
I enjoyed it a lot. I think David Baddiel is a very clever guy, and I think he's got a very, very good cast. I mean, he wrote it for Omar Jalili, and he's the heart of the film. But also, at the point when Omar Jalili learns that he is, in fact, Jewish, he has, of course, to learn how to be Jewish. Yeah. So then, who comes into the picture is Richard Schiff from the West Wing, who's incongruously cast as a London cabbie, but then has sessions with him in which, for example, he tries to teach him how to dance like in Fiddler on the Roof, or listen to very, very sad music, you know, and sort of get upset. And it's really, really clever. There are times when it doesn't quite hit the button, but I personally enjoyed it a lot. And there are a lot of nice touches. For example, the first time you see Omar Jalili, he's actually wearing a Tottenham Hotspur football shirt. And Tottenham Hotspur are, in fact, a team who are genuinely associated with being Jewish. So there's a lot of clever little touches in there.
Okay. Boy, just in a nutshell, it's Infidel. Is it a good movie? Would you recommend it as a movie?
I very much enjoyed it. I think the star of the show is David Baddiel's script. Ricky's right. There's touches.
Is it a brave topic, do you think?
It's not really. I don't think it's trying to be as controversial as perhaps the coverage of it is made
out. It's not controversial at all.
Exactly. It's a great idea. It's a great idea for a film, and Muslim finds out he's really Jewish. That's a great idea, and it takes it down various very enjoyable comic routes. David's script is really clever, and I thought everyone in it was great. There's lots of nice cameos, like Miranda Hart, we heard in that clip's in it. Matt Lucas is in it. There's every Jewish bit actor you'd ever care to mention is in it, in the big bar mitzvah scene. I love the bar mitzvah scene. It is, you know, there's no higher praise for me than to say it's reminiscent in some respects of Woody Allen.
Okay. I watched The Invention of Lying a couple of weeks ago on an aeroplane, and I really enjoyed it. And what struck me about that was that seemed to me like quite a brave film.
That was controversial.
More controversial audience
than I first thought in America. It was a Christian website saying it was blasphemous.
I mean, I suppose why it was considered so subversive was that, I mean, it was probably the first Hollywood proper atheistic film.
Yeah.
But it was cradled in a really sweet rom-com.
So it was even worse for them in a way. A lot of them are saying we should have been warned. Where's that warning?
may contain thoughts that you don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Might not agree totally with your fundamentalist views. I don't know. I don't know what sort of warning I'd put on it.
But there was a real backlash, was there, from on Christian websites to the film?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I just think that... no one cares.
No. There are, in fact, Christian websites which review films specifically with that in mind, and they tell you about all the bits you might be offended by. I'd like to see your entry.
It happened with the trailer. They were getting stills from the trailer and saying, look, this looks blasphemous. Yeah. And they obviously didn't understand what it was then. And it's not blasphemous, because I think blasphemy is insulting prophet or God and so on. And I don't believe in God, so I couldn't possibly insult him. I strongly believe he doesn't exist, so I don't see how I could possibly be insulting him.
Yeah, you're right. It's not the same as blasphemy, is it?
No.
Let's talk about Cemetery Junction, and this is... It's partly autobiographical, isn't it? This is 1970s.
Well, everything you do is, but yeah, I suppose it's the most personal film I've done. It's nothing more personal than where you grew up and your family and friends as you remember them. I grew up in the early 70s, and this is set in the early 70s in a small town. But it's not a sort of gritty kitchen sink slasherist Brit drama. You know, it's glorious. We've stolen a bit of how Hollywood does blue collar. You know, it's probably got more in common with, I don't know, Saturday Night Fever than Mike Lee in many ways. We wondered why Americans had the monopoly on that escape of trying to get out and that angsty stuff like Rebel Without a Cause. And we thought we could do it in England, and that's what we tried.
Boy, I really liked it. You're a big fan. You're also in the film, of course. I couldn't spot Boyd in the film. I looked really hard. You're in it for a second, aren't you?
I would say half a second, yeah.
What probably threw you off is that he, like some... animals change their outline so predators don't spot them. Boyd popped on a little wig, and so you'd go, well, that's not him. It hasn't got a little dome shiny top. Which is how I recognise him. Yeah. People coming towards me, I go, oh, there's a little shiny round one. Maybe it's either Carl Pilkington or Boyd Hilton. And that's
heavily disguised. I look hideous, absolutely hideous. It did make me think, I'm glad I haven't got any hair. There's something about having hair.
I think I'm glad I'm standing next to Steve Merchant, who looks worse.
Yeah.
He has worse hair and a worse moustache.
He had the audacity to tell me, as soon as he saw me, he said, you look awful. And really? I looked at him and I thought, he grew that moustache, didn't he, especially?
Yes,
that's
a real
moustache.
That is a real moustache.
My one wasn't a real moustache. He grew his moustache and he looked hideous.
So little Boyd comes down to the set like a competition winner who's allowed to be an extra in a film. And then when he got to the edit, did you think, I better make sure he's in there. I better make sure we leave a little moment of Boyd Hilton in this film.
Well, he was in it throughout, really, because he was there over the day. And so it would have been hard to completely cut around him and get him out anyway. But no, there's one nice shot of you, isn't there?
There is.
In all your glory.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So, yeah.
But Carl has like 2 or 3 seconds lingering on him.
Carl has sort of like a big moment. It's a non-speaking part. It's just when he turns and looks. And that was probably my best day, just seeing Carl Pilkington make a stupid face for my own amusement.
Yeah. Carl at last has made it to the big screen.
He has. Oh, because we did the Invention of Lion, but I cut him out because he was in a sequence that we
cut.
He was
dressed as a caveman.
It was like a pre-credit sort of sequence, a little short movie to show the evolution of man in this alternative universe. And then I thought we didn't need that. He was on the. It's the most expensive DVD extra, apparently. $3 million on the DVD.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Can I just say that even though I'm in it, and obviously I'm biased, but it is a really special film. I think it's a really special film. And it is exactly the kind of film that you wish would be made, that British people made more often.
Let's get some impartial analysis. Floyd, what do you think of Cemetery Junction?
Yeah, very good. I saw it twice. I went back and I thought, am I going to enjoy it as much the second time? Because I was so caught up in the music and the feel and the period of it the first time. I enjoyed it more the second time because I got more involved in the story. So, yeah, it was nice to have T-Rex. It was very nice to have Crazy Horses. Thank you very much. That's part of the soundtrack. A very interesting soundtrack, not an obvious soundtrack, because you can fall into a trap with that. You can have too much 70s, paraphernalia. You can have too many on-the-nose kind of soundtrack choices. But actually, it was very, very clever.
The music is phenomenal. In fact, not only the selections from the songs that you use are brilliant, but actually the original, there's orchestral music as well, which I thought was fantastic as well. The actual original
score to make it fit in, and we spent quite a bit on that. I mean, the most expensive was the entire Rain Song by Led Zeppelin that ends the film, that we cut around to make it fit. And it's just such an amazing piece of music. And there's the Bowie version of All the Young Dudes.
The Bowie version of All the Young Dudes is a different version, because in the original version there's these really annoying saxophones that kind of ruin the chorus, and which aren't in the version.
No, but this version is basically the Mott the Hoople version with his vocal in place of it. So it's that thing. So you'll definitely recognise it. But and of course, the film starts with my favourite piece of music of all time, which is Vaughan Williams. And it just shows, how beautiful England is. I feel this is a bit of a love letter to England and my memories of that time. And I don't think that you're bogged down. I don't think they keep pushing 1973 down your throat. You know, it's a coming-of-age story that is the same whatever, wherever you go. It's about, a group of 20-somethings trying to escape this inevitable, stifling mentality of... are you going to be stuck there for the rest of your life?
I like the tone of it a lot. And there are people who live in kind of relative poverty, but that, as you say, it's not gritty, it's not depressing, it's not sad. I read an interview with you at the weekend where you were talking about the film The Apartment, which is my favourite film of all time. And this
might be mine for many reasons. The fact that it's, you think it's a comedy, but there's such dramatic elements in it, and it's so subtle, and it's just fantastic.
And they're not people feeling sorry for themselves in that film either, are
they? In fact, one of the directions we gave to Felicity Jones was to more Shirley MacLaine. That sort of, our references were things like that. And with the lads, one thing that we do compete with America on in cool is rock and roll, really. And we found a guy that's a bit like, I don't know, Richard Ashcroft meets Gallagher meets, James Dean. So, there's the casting we're very proud of.
Let's talk about the Texas News. We'll come back and talk about that, because there's some great kind of new talent that you introduced her to during this film. by the way, you can see the studio today. If you've ever wondered what Ricky Gervais looks like, then you look's in. You go to bbc.co.uk.
He's lost a lot of weight.
I was going to make that point. /5Live. You're looking really good. You've been working out.
I have been working out.
I mean, actually, proper definition on your pecs there.
Yeah.
I can
juggle them. What?
What are you benching?
Yeah. I used to have breasts, and now you call them pecs, so that's an improvement already, isn't it? And they're where they should be, nearer the chest area.
But you say you're going to the gym and you're doing
well. Yeah, I've got no excuse. I've got a gym in my house now.
Oh, have
you? A spa, so I use it every day. So it wasn't a folly.
Personal trainer or on your own?
On my own. And I run over the heath, come back. I've probably been... Because, I thought, well, that's it now. I think I hit about 14 stone. And I thought, that's enough. I just steadily put on weight for the last, 15 years of my life. And I just thought, oh, God, I'm going to die. but I didn't want to give up anything. I haven't given up any food. I still eat
drink wine every night, cheese. Yeah. But I punish myself the next day. I do an hour and just sweat and sweat.
It's
and sweat.
Earning the right to eat a lot
exactly.
of cheese and drink a lot of wine.
But that's it, exactly. If you just give up stuff, what's the point in living longer anyway?
Yeah.
So I'm going to work out and live longer to eat more cheese and drink more alcohol. That's why I'm doing it.
Good idea, but it's...
Yeah, yes, kids. Listen to Ricky. Yeah.
I liked how offended you were on your blog by the idea that you were dieting. You were.
Well, no. It's not the idea that we're dieting. It's the way they go, Ricky Gervais has lost 3 stone because he's been living in LA a lot, and it's to get Hollywood roles. Yeah. Just that's
you've
the
got
thing.
Them anyway.
Of course, yeah. I've turned down more films than I've done, about 90 more films than I've done. I'd never lose weight to get a real film. If someone said you've got to lose weight, I'd go shove it. No, I'm not going to do that. I play parts that I'm a fat little loser. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I'm going to have to wear a fat suit. But yeah. I know.
You might get off with fewer parts.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just wrong. I haven't lost 3 stone. I've lost about a stone now.
I agree.
I'm very flattered. But it's just, you know, that's what a blog's for, isn't it? Getting the information absolutely right.
I agree with you. You don't want to give up these things that you enjoy.
No, absolutely not.
That's what living life's about.
You can do it. I know it's a luxury. Some people can't work out every day, and you know, but yeah. That's why I did it.
What's that Clement Freud line about? If you give up drinking and cheese, you don't live longer. It just seems like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I agree. Yes. Totally, yeah. Cheese. How could anyone give up cheese?
It's the best, isn't it?
You're in America a lot at the moment. Have you got an apartment in Manhattan?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's lovely.
Exciting. You here or there more?
Here more. I go there frequently. We shoot over every sort of like month for a week or two, and I get everything done then. I go out there for a sort of like a working holiday, so I plug whatever film or TV show or whatever I'm doing.
I enjoy seeing you on The Daily Show, because we get The Daily Show over here. Boyd, you were in New York last week. Didn't you see a lot of Ricky?
I did, yeah. On television. Right. I saw Ricky on Letterman. Wish you were on all
always
the time.
Fun. That's always. My 15th.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is there
anyone
who's been on Letterman more than you?
Not as a guest, I don't
think. Just David Letterman.
Yeah, just David Letterman. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But even better, I saw you on The View. I loved seeing you on The View, surrounded by that gaggle.
Boyd, explain what The View is.
Well, The View is like Loose Women, but a million times better.
Nothing wrong with Loose Women.
Nothing wrong with Loose Women. But they do ask quite personal questions. They're asking you stuff about, you know, all the old stuff about why haven't you had children and why haven't you married Jane, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you dealt with it very well. You were fine with it, but it's definitely like that's the stuff they want to know, doesn't it?
Of course. Oh, yeah. It's that. It's sort of like crashing a hen party that hasn't started yet, but it's going to get messy unless you get out.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Some of the stuff Whoopi Goldberg comes out with on that show is astonishing.
Oh, amazing.
In the middle of the morning.
Oh, there's nothing that they're embarrassed about. But that's the same with... Yeah. I was on Loose Women and I was waiting backstage, and during the break, the things they were talking about, I was going red.
Was that like a hen party that's about to start
as
well?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's already started. And some of them haven't even taken their lithium. It's all kicked off.
They get out the penis whistle.
But I mean, it's an institution, The View. So
Well, let's talk about the film again. Talking about America in particular, do you think an American audience will get Cemetery Junction? Do you think it'll play okay in America?
They will, because you know, outside the old cultural reference, and you know, people said this about The Office. People didn't think they'd get The Office. You know, on the face of it, The Office looks very quintessentially English, but it's not, because its themes are universal. Mm. Boy meets girl. A decent job of work, popularity, making a difference, all these things. And Cemetery Junction, it doesn't matter where you are, where you're born, what time you're born in, fundamentally, people have a certain relationship and angst about growing up, their relationship with their parents, their do I stay or do I go. That is universal, it's never changed, and it doesn't matter where you're from. So that they will get it, yeah.
I was talking, Stephen Merchant was in on Wednesday, and I was saying to him that it feels to me like there's something of the emotion and the sentiment and the drama that you've taken out of Extras, and in particular The Office, and put into this film. So there's something of, say, Tim and Dawn's story, I think, in this movie, isn't
there? Well, what else is there? You know, it's boy meets girl, making a difference, decent job of work, all those things that are that are about the meaning of life. And you know, I think you have got to take people on an emotional journey. I don't really want to do a knockabout comedy, because you can do that on telly, really. And I think if you're given millions of dollars to do a film, I think you should make sure you try and make it life-changing for someone to, you know. Yeah. And It is the most dramatic thing we've done so far. There's funny elements. I think, you know, it is funny. There's lots of laughs. But I'd say it was a feel-good drama or coming-of-age drama.
Some of the funniest scenes are actually in that ballroom, Boyd, where... Yeah. I'm not saying you're funny in the film. I didn't notice you in the film.
No, you wouldn't.
But there's some...
They are great scenes, yeah. I mean, those scenes are the ones that crystallise exactly what Rick and Steve did brilliantly, which is where there are really funny moments in it. And you know, you see Carl in it, and you see Steve in his stupid moustache, and then you see this amazing scene where Ralph Fiennes gives this talk tribute to a guy who's retiring. And that is one of the most heartbreaking scenes.
Yeah, isn't it?
Oh, thank you.
For a long time. The name of the wife.
And Emily Watson. Also in that scene, and Emily Watson, I have to say, who's Ralph Fiennes' husband, the wife of the boss, in just a few small moments in this film, in a few scenes, she is heartbreaking.
She's the beating heart, because she just stands for every woman whose dreams was crushed, and she's kept it from her daughter. And Freddie is different. He's the first chivalrous man of the 70s in a way, and he's a romantic lead, and he notices this, and you know, it's about saving each other, you know, and. I think Emily Watson. I think everyone did an amazing job.
Ralph Fiennes does a terrific job. He's very good at that.
Everyone's great, but there's something about. Yeah, I think she's the heart of the film. She's one of my favourite films of all time, Punch Drunk Love. She is an absolute giant.
Great film.
But she's just stupendous in this. It's in hardly any scene.
She's just
phenomenal.
That's what excites us. So people are saying, so this is the first thing you've directed. It's like The Office and extras didn't count, you know? And that they think you can't be a director unless you've got 1,000 extras and you're doing dolly shots, and they're all important, and it looks lovely, I think. But what excites us about direction is the directing the actors, is the nuance of the piece, the things you notice the third time round, a touch or a look or a pulling focus. Those are the things that excite me about directing, and those are the things that we've been doing for 10 years together. And it has got to be different sensibilities in a way, because you've got to cram everything you did in 12 episodes into an hour and a half. But,
it's great. I think it's really good. I was talking to Matthew Vaughan, came in the other day, we were talking about Kick-Ass, and he was saying with his last film, Stardust, there was quite a bit of studio interference. So with Kick-Ass, he raised all the money himself, and he has complete control over the film, and you can tell when you watch, and that's been a theme of your work, hasn't it, with The Office and extras, I assume, with this.
It's the only way. I mean, the first film I did was Invention of Lion, and I got financial backing and sold it to the studio so I'd have fine edit. It was so important to me, because what's the point? And if you're only trying to please yourself, you're bulletproof. It's very nice that people like the film, and I really appreciate it, and I love people to want the film, but if they don't, there's nothing I can do about it, and it doesn't matter that much. But what I couldn't forgive myself for was making a film I didn't like. That's what I could never get over.
Or compromising.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what you're doing. So if you've got the power, then if you're only trying to please yourself, you're bulletproof.
Ricky Gervais is here, along with Boyd and Floyd, because it's Films on a Friday, and Cemetery Junction, which is out next week.
Next Wednesday. 14th.
And there's quite a lot of new talent in there, isn't there? I read an interview where you said you're quite inspired by stuff like Billy Lyon on Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, which introduced people to...
That would certainly be our English influences, apart from, you know, real life and growing up then. That sort of new wave of British cinema. I mean, you can see that there's certain points that are, you know, homages to Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, the factory stuff, and Billy Lyre, you know, more the sort of the kitchen sink stuff, the relationship with me and the family, we sort of pride ourselves on starting again, because we did it with The Office. For people remember when no one in The Office was famous, you know, they were all unknowns, you know, and now
they're all doing really well all over the place. I saw Mackenzie Crook in Jerusalem this week. He's great in it. Have you seen the play?
I thought you meant you went to Jerusalem.
No, I didn't.
And I thought him there, and he was just... Yeah, I did, yeah.
He was wandering around.
Yeah, you've done well. Yeah, so we like to do that, but not just because we're total power freaks and like to do it all ourselves, but because it suspends your disbelief for a little while, you know, and they're certainly future stars.
Your stand-up, which I have seen, Science is your tour at the moment, which is excellent. I'm a big fan of any material about Noah's Ark.
Oh, that's fun.
That's a good routine in there. I saw it in Edinburgh, and when I think you were just...
That was the first one. That was like, it was nearly a warm-up. I did it there, and then... And then I did about 50 dates last year, a little arena tour.
Little arena tour.
And now I'm doing, like, the second round of it, because I had to keep it going, because I have to keep stopping to go back and forth to do other things, and I'm doing some more dates, and the Wembley week sold out, so I'm doing a week at Hammersmith,
because I've got it available. Here. It's 6th to the 11th of September.
That's right.
Go on sale on the 16th of April.
And I'm going to record the DVD of it here, and then before that I'm recording the American version for HBO, so I'm back and forth to sort of doing two tours at once.
I know what I want to ask you about. Are you going to be in the American office? Is David Brent going to be in the American office?
That started, well, I was doing a junket in America and someone said, would you ever appear in the American office? And I said, yeah, definitely. And that was it. The next day, Ricky Gervais to definitely appear in the American office as David Brent. So
it's not true.
It's not true that I won't, but it's not true that it's certain. That nothing's been decided. And me and Steve might write another one. Actually, we've written one. And it's not true that it's fair company. No, not at all. No.
Do you like that?
I might.
It'd be quite exciting to play David Brent again, wouldn't it?
It'd be great. Yeah, I've always thought maybe bumping into him and it takes me back, and and we both think we're just so great together, but now the office are going, oh my god, there's two of them. maybe, but there's
you can make a film out of that, you know, a guy who basically starts to live the life that people are writing for him on Twitter, because it must be so weird to have your life and you know what's going on, you know the things you've been offered, you know the things you're actually going to take, but then there's this whole other character out there, this doppelganger guy who's doing all these other things.
Well, I wrote on my blog, I think there's so much misinformation out there. There must be more things that are wrong now in the world than are right. And you try and put it right on the blog, but but what can you do, you know? I think the American office is great, but I've got no plans to pop up.
Would you like to host the Oscars?
No.
Okay, that's that.
I'd do the Globes again.
You would, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was great fun. I wouldn't get that freedom at the Oscars at all. No.
Well, thank you for listening. There will be another movie podcast with me again, and Boyd, and Floyd next week.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.